Shila. Prem se gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivas Arigo Uda Bhakta Vrindaki Shishi Radha Krishna Go Gopagopina Shamakundu Radha Kundi Giri Govardhana Ki Shri Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Shri Mayapur Dhamma Ki Ganga Maya Ki Jamuna Maya Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Shrimati Devi Ki Samaveta Bhakta Vrindaki Jai Nitai Gaur Previndaki. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada.
If you're not scheduled, if you haven't scheduled yourself by now to make a presentation, then at the end of today's class, if you're an enrolled student, you'll have to, you're expected to, that's a nicer way of saying it, you're expected to turn in a one-page essay on the question that we handed out on Friday. That's about it. So, who's up first?
Who's it? Doyle Gauranga? I think I'll have to sit here in this part on the side.
Maybe we should just announce who's
okay,
up.
Okay, so then Doyle Gauranga is on. Then Sri Gandharvika and Bhakting Sharan.
Yeah. And still please follow the formal etiquette of introducing yourself, even though we just introduced you.
Okay. I mean, unless he's Sri Gandharvika.
Not yet.
I'm not yet. Maybe.
It's not the Saraswati Thakur was a Sri Varshavadavi baby, Dai Tai Das. So.
Hare Krishna. My name is Dayal Gauranga Das, and I was not really expecting that I would speak first. But.
You're not. The others have already spoken before you on the other day.
That's good. Okay. So I chosen to speak on. Third verse from Kanta, from the 11th chapter, and particularly in some part of the commentary. So I just read it first, and then try to see what I can say. The citizens of Dwaraka, having heard the sound which threatens fear personified in the material world, began to run towards him fast, just to have a long-desired audience with the Lord, who is the protector of all the devotees. And I would not read the entire purport, but the particular part of the purport which I was inspired to speak on. The sound of the Lord is identical with the Lord, as we try to explain by non-dual position of the Lord. The material existence of our present status is full of fear. Out of the four problems of material existence, namely the food problem, the shelter problem, the fear problem, and the mating problem, the fear problem gives us more trouble than the others. We are always fearful due to our ignorance of the next problem. The whole material existence is full of problems, and thus the fear problem is always prominent. This is due to our association with the illusory energy of the Lord, known as Maya, or external energy. Yet all fear is vanished as soon as there is a sound of the Lord represented by His holy name, as it was sounded by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the following 16 words. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We can take advantage of the sounds of these sounds and be free from all threatening problems of material existence. So I was inspired to speak a little bit on this subject because it's relevant to me particularly. And first verse which I wanted to, which was pointed to me by Uttama Shloka yesterday, which is very relevant. It's I think 14th verse of the first chapter of this canto. And it sounds like living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by the fear personified. So in the 11th chapter of this verse, the entrance of Krishna to the city of Dwaraka is described. And he start, as Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj mentioned, he start, before entering, he was sounding his conch shell to let everybody know that he is coming. So in Srila Prabhupada comments, in this particular verse, he gives this comment about the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and how all the fear is actually dissipated by this mantra. So we see in the description of this 11th chapter how all the citizens, they were practically not alive before Krishna was coming. So they were saying, you are always abroad, so we have no life without you. And now when you return, now we have life. And all the city became alive. Everybody rushed forward to meet Krishna. Everybody dropped all his duties. And somebody dropped eating, somebody stopped chatting, many, many things. And everybody in a haste ran towards meeting Krishna. Another thing is that the whole city was prepared to meet him. So it was a very conducive environment, a very pleasant environment for Krishna to come back because all his devotees were receiving him. So I was thinking, reading this purport of Srila Prabhupada, that I can draw analogy in my life minimum. As when we chant Hare Krishna, we invite in Krishna to come to the city of our heart. So in my case, it's not at all Dwaraka. Anyway, but, you know, we invite in him. And
I hope it's not Detroit.
I think it's something. Anyway, so what is actually our chanting Hare Krishna? Chanting Hare Krishna is, we say, O Krishna, or internal energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. And basically, please come into my heart, reside in my heart, reside on my tongue, and purify myself. And basically, we need to make our heart a proper place to receive Krishna, to have all the nice gardens, all the nice arrangement, and minimum give attention to Krishna. So I was thinking, how would Krishna would feel if he would sound his conch shell? I gave Krishna invitation. Krishna, please come to the city of my heart. And Krishna blows his conch shell of the holy name. He comes. So what am I doing? Am I running hastily to meet Krishna? Not at all. I basically don't see that he's coming at all. I'm engaged with my thoughts, plans of my life. Sometimes one friend of mine had a flat, and when you come to his flat, it's a carpet before the flat. So on the carpet there's a nice words, very heartfelt greeting to the guest who is coming. It is said, "Oh no, not you again." So I thought it's kind of carpet I have in my heart. Krishna comes, and first of all, I meet him with this carpet. You know, what are you doing, Krishna? I mean, I'm really busy with plans for my day, thinking of future, thinking of past, you know, and engage with all my desires. And, yeah, I called you, but can you wait, you know, a bit? So, you know, I finished, because 2 hours of japa is the best time to plan for the day. Nobody disturbing you. You're not in a haste. So your mind is very much engaged in the productive work. And naturally, Krishna is not very much inspired to see such a greeting. He comes once, maybe he came once, I don't know even if he came at all. Maybe I was not calling for him very feelingly. But even if he came, if I didn't give him attention, what he would do? He would think, yeah, this guy is not serious. He's calling for me, but he's engaged in his business. So let him experience more fear in this life. Let him try to arrange for his life. Let him try to solve the problems of anything, of material existence himself, because he doesn't want, he actually, this is a tenth offense of the Holy Name. Tenth offense of the Holy Name is to maintain material attachment, even though having heard so many instructions. And the 11th offense is inattentive chanting. So actually by reading this and contemplating, I was understanding how much it is offense, actually. Why inattentive chanting is offense. We invite in somebody, can you imagine? You call somebody, please come to my house. He said, I'm busy, you know, I have so many devotees to attend to. Oh, please come to me, I really need you, you know. My heart is full of contamination and my life is full of misery, so please come. So he's coming, he's ringing your door. You have a carpet, or no, not you again. You don't open the door, you don't give any attention. So how often he would come? So I was contemplating this, the whole set of this chapter was set to help me deeply understand what am I doing if I'm not attentive while chanting. How actually should I be grateful that Krishna appeared in this world in this holy name? It's his mercy. He's even more merciful than Krishna himself, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Eh? And even understanding this, I'm not paying any attention to him. So I commit an offense to the holy name. And therefore, the spiritual life will be very, very long and boring and full of fear and no taste. And that's understandable. Why? Because I don't take advantage of the spiritual life. I don't take advantage of the most sublime process of chanting of the holy name. So I, you know, by analyzing my life, I just wanted to give all of us a little bit food for digesting in our brain. You know, how we can really appreciate Krishna when he's coming in his holy name. How we can receive him. How we can decorate our heart. How we can run in haste to meet Krishna. And do not care of any other activities. Yeah. Let everything aside. Devotees was eating, they left everything. They left everything, they just run hastily to... Is it correct in English? they ran to meet Krishna. So, I hope this can be a meditation for us when we chant Hare Krishna. That actually Krishna is a person, we're praying to him. I was coming in this marathon time, I was going to Christian churches and I was seeing that Christians, they actually cry when they pray. I was thinking, why are we not really crying? Because for myself, I understood, I don't really understand that what I'm chanting is actually reciprocation with a person. And I don't understand actually how much suffer I am, how much I suffer, how much I need Krishna to solve the problems of my existence. If we understand this, if we understand that there's no other solution, there's one nice bhajan, Harinam Ashtaka, in the last verse said, Trini Kritya Jagat Sarvam Rajate Sakalo Param Chitananda Maya Shutam Harinam Aiva Kevalam. He said that comparing to the holy name, the whole universe seemed to be more less significant than the blade of grass. That nothing is more important than the holy name of the Lord. And with this understanding, with understanding that Krishna is a person, that this is the only solution, the only protector from all our fears, from that fear personified fears him. And all our problems will be solved just if we really take shelter of Krishna in this form. Hare Krishna.
Nice, huh? I'd like to make a comment. First of all, it was very pleasant. Well presented. presentation. And it's always fascinates me how these wonderful transcendental conjunctions, you know, because just before coming here, Maharaj, myself, and Nita Gauranga Prabhu were just over there talking more or less about the same thing in a somewhat different context, but you used this word need several times. And so Maharaj was, our discussion was about how, and I think this is a good education for everyone here. As we go deeper and deeper into Bhagavatam, then the need, yes, for us, all us to understand this sambandha abhideya prayojana. When you hear these Sanskrit terms, you know, many devotees immediately big question mark comes up with it. What does it really mean? But these work within the transcendental shaktis of the Lord's Dham, the Hladini, Samvit, Sandini. And Prabhupada said that these are the three modes of the spiritual world. And they're actually reflected into the material world as the three modes, sattva, rajas, tamas. So in the material world, the three modes, they're codependent. You can never actually, in the material circumference, material jagat, separate something and say this is pure goodness. Because its very existence as goodness depends on its differentiation from ignorance on one side and passion on the other. You see, that's how it's defined. So, therefore, Krishna in the 18th chapter speaks of how the modes are always in competition. So, in the same way, in the spiritual world, the three shaktis, they work together. And out of this is coming the lilas of the Lord. So, this need is prayojana. So this is very important to understand. If you think of sambandha abhideya prayojana as a kind of three rungs of a ladder, that first we, you know, climb over prayojana and we get to abhideya, and then we climb over abhideya, sambandha, and then climb over leaving abhideya behind, and then we get to prayojana, you haven't understood. And this is very much more resembles what I call my own special language for certain things I see. Totem poleism. You all know what a totem pole is? In northwestern USA, there are these tribal people, the Indians of Oregon and Washington State, and also Canada, British Columbia. So they're known for these, they built these from tree trunks, tall, because they have very tall trees there. Tallest trees in the world, actually. Yeah, gigantic trees, you know, like some with trunks as big around as this hall we're sitting in. And they just go up so high. So anyway, from these trees, they build these, what they're called totem poles. They're kind of some sort of, you know, in a way they remind you of Lord Jagannath, but it's coming out of the rather tamasic realm of consciousness.
It would be like you stack the three.
Instead of side by side, they're stacked up one, you know, and some of the hawk's face and some of the wolf face and some, you know. So, and this is sort of I don't know what their intention is, but in American society, we often use this term climbing up the totem pole, you know, that there's these different positions. And people think advancement means you just are climbing up and you occupy one station, one of, you know, the face with the beak for a while. And then you climb up to the next one and you get the face of the wolf. And then you climb up the next one, you know, like that, you know. And they think this is, but this sambandha abhideya prayojana does not work like that. It's just like the modes of nature in the material world, and in the sense that they're reflections here, that they work simultaneously and they're interdependent. So prayojana,
as Maharaj was nicely explaining, actually, I want to have you understand that even that as we were talking, Maharaj was giving me, we were all talking, but Maharaj was giving me a very nice deeper insight into this. Prayojana is the element of need. And therefore, when one comes up to the Prayojana platform, perfectional Prayojana platform, because Prayojana manifests, as you were explaining, even in the beginning, that we have a need for Krishna consciousness, therefore we became devotees. So it's a kind of very, you know, unrefined form of it that manifests in our mind, our mental needs, manifests in the mind. But it helps us become established in sambandha, that need. We're not really on the actual Prayojana platform until we are sharing in Srimati Radharani's need, because she is the very personification of need for Krishna. And that's why in the Rupanuga line, there are different what are called yuthas, or groups of gopis. And of course there's a famous competition, the two foremost yuthas. Actually, we don't even have to mention her name. We shouldn't mention her name. But you can look up in some book on yourself if you want to know her name. I'm not going to mention her name even. Because Raghunath Das Goswami, he was once offered, this famous story, he was once offered very nice milk sweet from which is very much dear to the Rajavasis, residents of Vrindavan, special milk preparation there. And so some devotee humbly brought this. And then he noticed, just from the leaf cup, he got a suspicion.
The leaves were very big.
Yeah, the leaves were very big. And he knew there's one place where these leaves, and what is it, Sakhistali. So he asked, where did this come from? And the devotee said, oh, Sakhistali, which is the place of this other gopi. And he immediately just threw it on the ground. So in the Rupanuga line, we want to join the yuta that is headed by Srimati Radharani, because of all their Lakshmi, Sahasra, Sasi. So there are hundreds and millions of gopis divided up into the Vrindavan Riti Chintamani by Vrindavan Das Thakur. Is a beautiful book to read about all these things. It's been translated by my godbrother Kusha Krata. And it's a really wonderful book, short book, that gives a very nice insight into the arrangements for all these different groups of gopis. Anyway, my point is that Srimati Radharani is being the Hladini Shakti Swarup, has more need, as Krishna's existence.
As much as there is.
Yeah, you know, right. That's a good way of putting it. Krishna is everything and more than everything. That's why in Vedanta, he is referred to as Purusha Artha. You see, the Purusha means the human being. So whatever we need, you know, Artha, whatever we require, that is coming from him. So the point of Vedanta is, why run around in the material world trying to satisfy this need, that need separately? Just go to the source of everything, because everything you need is there in unlimited fullness. You know, there's that story when Prabhupada was taken to St. Moritz in Switzerland for a health cure by Shamsundar Das, the original Shamsundar, his San Francisco disciple, thought it would be a good idea to air. But it came, unfortunately, the wrong season, winter season. So Prabhupada was in Switzerland. They're called the Chateau? Yeah, Chateau, I think. These special, nice, very beautiful looking wooden houses with veranda. And so he was staying in a chateau at St. Moritz. You could see Mount Matterhorn, the Alps. But it was all covered with snow. So Prabhupada turned to Shamsundar and said, "You have brought me to white hell." And then Shamsundar had to arrange to get him out of there, and they went to London. And then one of the first classes Prabhupada gave at the Lalitanishwara Temple, Shishirada Lalitanishwara Temple, was about how Krishna supplies everything to his devotee. And no one should, you were saying, should be fearless. You see, that was a very nice point. And Prabhupada was explaining this. Because if you surrender to Krishna and serve him, then Prabhupada said, then there will be full supply. And then look over Shamsundar, not snow supply. So Radharani is the very personification of that absolute need that for everything that Krishna is, and Krishna being the absolute truth in classical philosophy, going back to Nicholas of Cusa in the 14th century, he was the first European philosopher to accurately define absolute. Probably he found something from India circulating around some ship docked. but anyway, he gave a very good philosophical, in terms of our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, definition of absolute, that it means simultaneously everything and beyond everything. You see? So that is a chincha beda abeda tattva. That is when we say Krishna is abhigyaha, knowing everything, and swat, everything, independent from everything. Still his own self. And in Gita he says, in one sense I am everything, but I am apart from everything as the source of everything. You see? So this is the full definition of absolute. It doesn't simply mean everything. That's the Mayavadi, you know. Like there's this joke in America about the Buddhist who walks into a Jewish delicatessen. You know, and in these delicatessens you can get these bagels. It's a kind of something like a pretzel. So he asks for one. He says, make me one with everything. Means with all, you know, the different condiments and spices. Make me one with everything. In that sense, the Mayavadis, you know, the Shunyavadis want to become absolute. They just want to become one with everything. But that's not the full definition of absolute, because Krishna is not only everything, but he is beyond everything. That is the full definition of absolute. So Nicholas of Cusa was the first Western philosopher to get it right, you see, that I know of. The word absolute, yes, he not coined the word, but he put it together from other root words and gave that definition, and therefore we use it today. So it's nice to understand words from their origin, and if you understand them fully, that helps you understand their philosophy. So anyway, I just wanted to say that, and the other point, there was another very important point about need, because you were talking about, when in weakness and crying out for Krishna, and that's true. But Prabhupada, this is why I made a note, just when you were talking, Prabhupada spoke of the sahajyas. They're very quick to cry. And they're very quick to also express a need. Yes, actually it came up when you said you saw Christians crying. I know I've also been to these Orthodox countries where the rituals are the most elaborate in Christianity, and there's more practice of chanting of the name than in other forms of Christianity. So sentimentally we might... Well, anyway, Prabhupada did say it is a kind of primitive form of Vaishnavism. But you have to keep one thing in mind that Prabhupada said, that the sahajyas, they cry because they're weak. I mean, they're spiritually weak. They can't get their spiritual lives, their sadhana together. And so they're always falling down. And they know it. And those who are a little more sincere feel bad about it, but still they wear the tilak and are, the common village people are... Oh, Vaishnav Mahashay, and falling down, and they're accepting all that service. But inside they feel terrible, because, the night before, like that Beatles song, treat me like you did the night before. So, that was Gorkha Shordas Babaji. He used to sometimes, in the middle of the night, just suddenly cry out that such and such pundit, he would be in his place of bhajan, such and such famous pundit here in Mayapur, is right now having illicit sex with this widow somewhere. And that they would just go run there and they would find that it's happening because he was, his Gorkhasura Das Babaji's consciousness pervaded the whole of Mayapur Dhan. He knew everything that was going on. Sometimes he would be chanting, but he would just couldn't take it anymore, you know. He would chant on knotted piece of cloth, old Brahmin underwear. He would just tie into knots, talk about Nirupadi. And they would just throw it down and, I cannot stand this anymore! How can they accept him as pundit when he's doing this? And then if there was devotees, they would go and see and it would actually be true. They would catch, you know, in the middle of the night, they would just go there and find it that it's true. So this is the, you know, the corner these sahajas are in. They're spiritually weak, and so Prabhupada was pointing that out. Yes, they have kirtan, and they cry, and all symptoms which we may think of sincerity are there, but they're simply weak. Prabhupada said that. They're simply weak. So the real transcendental emotion, this is the point, prayojana. And you see, you have to go through sambandha, obidyeya, and then you achieve the real prayojana. And then you cry like Srimati, you know, not like Srimati Radharani, because she is the Mahabhava Swarup, and only Mahaprabhu can cry like her. But you share in her grief. This is the beauty of the association of the gopis that you read in Prabhupada, because everything is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how the 16 gopis, their relationship with Radharani, the main 16, and how they're so expert when she's sad. There's one gopi who knows just what to say to brighten her up. Oh, Krishna will come back. Please, don't be so sad. And someone will speak some jokes, and someone will sing, and someone will dance, and someone will bring some, you know, just to keep Radharani nice, you know. So they share in her grief. And in our line, if we are blessed by Mahaprabhu, then we may be the little assistants to the assistants, the little manjaris, like we have these little boys here. I wouldn't at all suggest that they're examples of manjaris, but you know, when we older ones need something, we call upon a boy, can you bring this, can you bring that? And they're very happy, you know. That's when you see they become bright. It's a natural thing that when an older, one who's older and respected asks one who's younger and maybe feeling a little neglected to do some service, they become bright and happy. So this is the bliss of the manjaris. When some sakhi says, Srimati Radharani needs something right now, some coal for her eyes, you see. Because this brings ecstasy out. When she blackens her eyes, that the black is Krishna. And so then when she's in separation from Krishna, in that way she can associate with him just by blackening her eye. And there will be some gopi who does that, sakis. A sakhi will put the black on the eye. But a manjari can go run and get the coal, you see. And then, but then there's the problem with the mother-in-law, Jatila. She'll come in, and when she sees Radharani's ecstasy as the coal is being supplied, oh yes, yeah, actually Radharani, she'll call out, because it's common in Braja Basa to call the coal because it's black, Krishna. So she'll ask her sakhi friend, can you bring the Krishna? And then her voice starts to tremble and tears start pouring from her eyes. And then Jatila's looking in, what is this? Why all this excitement for just some coal? You know, she becomes very suspicious about this. So that is real need for Krishna. So it is on, means we can experience that only when we're firmly established in abhidhya, which is the process of devotional service, ninefold process of bhakti yoga, and connected by sambandha gyan, the knowledge given by Sri Guru Parampara, then there'll be, by the grace of Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu only by His grace, can we actually experience this need of Srimati Radharani. Otherwise, you know, you can see the sentimentalist crying, but it doesn't really speak for their actual spiritual situation. So I've already spoken way too long, so I'll shut up. So, someone's next. Yeah, and please, Mataji, don't, you know, you can continue tomorrow. You don't have to feel rushed. Because I'm such a time hog.
My name is Srigandhar Yukadas. And yesterday Maharaj said on the Srimad Bhagavatam class how difference makes the rasa. He made the example that if everybody will be the best kirtan leader, then it will not be the rasa. So because of this, I'm here. Everybody spoke so nicely, so to make some rasa. And also I will tell you stories. Here in our study guide, it's specially mentioned from the 35th verse from the purport of Srila Prabhupada, one quote. So Srila Prabhupada is saying, the women who became the wives of the Lord are certainly not ordinary women, because to get the Lord as one husband is the result of many, many millions of births tapasya, austerity. So I was thinking to tell something about who were these wives of the Lord, who are the women who became the wife of the Lord. So in Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada is actually saying, revealing to us that 16,108 gopis became the wives. So like as Krishna first time appearing in Srimad Bhagavatam in 7th canto, like a chariot driver of Arjuna, this is the first time where gopis are appearing in Srimad Bhagavatam, but in more hidden way. And they will stay hidden until the 10th chapter. And even then, the Radharani will stay hidden. More gopis will be revealed, but Radharani only with the Vardhara Adita. But Srila Prabhupada will reveal even the Radha's name in Krishna book. So, also Srila Prabhupada is saying that main eight gopis, eight queens of Dvaraka, they're Krishna's Ashtasakis. Krishna's Ashtasakis are three from Radharani's side and five from another side. Maharaj didn't mention the name, but I'm going to mention. So from Radharani's side is Radha, Lalita, and Vishaka. And from another side are Shabya, Shyama, Padma, Vada, and Chandravali. So this is Krishna's Ashtasakis, and they became eight main gopis. Of course, Radharani.
It's not Ashtasaki. Ashtasaki is you have a group leader, mm-hmm. and she has her main eight.
Yes, those are all Radharani.
Yes. Those are Ashtasaki. So mm-hmm. each Yudhishthira has her Ashtasaki.
You're talking about a whole other group.
Yeah, but here, this what you're meaning is, out of unlimited amounts of gopis, then 16,108 are main, of that 108 are main, of that 8 are main. So yeah. These are the eight main gopis.
Okay. So this
each
is
one the... of them is a group leader, and each of them has their...
So about this 8, I will speak more. So when Krishna left from Vrindavan to Mathura to kill King Kamsa, all the bridge buses were feeling so much separation from him. And only thing that kept them alive was the Krishna's promise that he would return. But when Krishna went to Dvaraka, then they were thinking, oh, this is now the end. Because when he was in Mathura, they were thinking there is some chance the messages can go to Mathura and he is near, so there is some chance he is going to come back. But Dvaraka is so far away, so we don't think he will ever come back. So Lalita, Vishaka, and Radha, they were wandering in all 12 forest in Braja, trying to find Krishna. And Radha was praying to Surya God, please, if you were ever satisfied with my worship, please fulfill my desire. So they went to Kalatirtha. This is now near to, in Varshana's side. This is the place where Krishna and Balaram are going to play with the Bosakas. So they were thinking, maybe Krishna is there. So that time, Yamuna was flowing there. Kalatirtha. So in Yamuna, they saw beautiful blue lotuses. And Radharani, because of her separation, strong feelings of separation, she saw the Krishna between those lotuses. So she started running and she took Vishakha for her hand. And they start going towards Krishna, who were actually not there. But how they were going more deeper and deeper in Yamuna, they start droning. And because Vishakha is actually Yamuna, and Yamuna is the daughter of Surya God. So when Surya saw how her daughter is droning, he came and took them both to the sun planet. But Lalita, she was standing on the bank of Yamuna, and she saw how Radha and Vishakha, they're disappearing in Yamuna. And she wanted to go and jump, to go with her friends. But then Vrinda Devi came and she said, no, you cannot go because Krishna left us, Radha left. Now you're the chief gopi. What all the Vrijavasis will do without you? So you have to stay. So Lalita, she didn't go jump to Yamuna, but she couldn't feel the big separation from Radha and Krishna. So she went on Govardhan Hill. And Govardhan, those places, and that time was very high. So she went on the top of Govardhan, and whispering Radheshyam, she jumped from Govardhan. So also Shabya, Padma, Bhadra, and Shyama, the four kings from South India, they came and they took them to their kingdom. And Chandravali was taken to faraway land. So by arrangement of Lila Shakti, the first immediate arrangement was arranged for Chandravali. She became the daughter of King Bhishmaka, and she was known as Rukmini. So when she was in the age of marriage, Narada Muni came to her and said, he started telling to her about the glories of Krishna, about his qualities and how he looks like. So Rukmini was immediately attached to Krishna, and she decided in her heart that Krishna is going to be her husband. But then her brother, Rukmi, he already arranged for her the marriage for Shishupal. So Rukmini, she wrote a letter to Krishna and a letter asking Krishna to kidnap her. And she made a plan when she will go to worship Durga that Krishna should come and kidnap her. So Krishna, because he's Bhaktavatsala, his devotees are very dear to him. So he went to the place, and we know from Krishna book how he kidnapped Rukmini, and then Balaram with the army of Yadus, they wanted to stop Krishna, but they failed. But less known is that King Bhishmaka, he said to Krishna, okay, if you want to marry my daughter, I have one condition for you. And then his condition was that Krishna cannot marry other girl without the permission of his daughter, so without Rukmini's permission. And Krishna agreed. So at the same time on Surya planet, the Radharani, she was feeling so much separation, now not only from Krishna, but from Vrindavan as well. And the wife of Surya God, she was telling to her that, but we also have Krishna. We worship in Krishna. My husband, we have the deity of Lord Narayan. But Radha was telling, but this is not my Krishna. And she was praying so much to Surya God to please fulfill her desire. And there was one worshipper of Surya, Satrajit, and Surya became very pleased with him. So he decided to give to Satrajit Shyamantaka jewel and together Radha with the jewel, the daughter. So Satrajit accepted the jewel and the daughter got the name Satyabhama. So, but Shyamantaka jewel was producing 8 bharas of gold every day. So Satrajit became very greedy. And Krishna came to Satrajit and said, can you please return back the jewel to Ugrasen? But he didn't want, he refused Krishna. And then Satrajit's brother stole the jewel and he went to jungle, but in jungle the lion ate the brother. And then the rumors start going around how actually Krishna arranged to his brother to be killed. And Krishna, he didn't want that his name or the name of his devotees will be spoiled or some bad to be, don't speak bad about him. So Krishna immediately, he went to king of monkeys, Jambavan, and he took the Shyamantaka jewel and gave back to Satrajit. And Satrajit, when Krishna returned him a jewel, he felt very ashamed. So he said, okay, I will give my daughter to you as to become your wife. So then Satyabhama with her mother Vrida, they went to Rukmini's palace. And Rukmini, when she saw Satyabhama, she was thinking, who is this beautiful girl? But they couldn't recognize each other. by the arrangement of Lila Shakti. They both knew, Satyabhama knew that she's Radha, and Rukmini, she knew that she's Chandravali, but they too, they couldn't recognize each other. And then, but Radha, she couldn't think that somebody else can become her husband, so she went to Rukmini and said, please protect me. If you can put me to some place where even the word of the man is not heard of. And Rukmini was very happy to hear this, because she was afraid when she saw such a beautiful girl that maybe Krishna will fall in love in her. So she said, yes, I will put you in one place when the king is never coming. So this is Nava Vrindavan. It's arranged by Vishvakarma, made completely the same everything, like in Vrindavan, he made in Dvaraka. But Krishna, he is never going there because he feels so much separation. So she said to Satyabhama, okay, I will put you there, and there you will have two girls, Nava Vrinda and Bakula, they will help you. So then Satyabhama went to Nava Vrindavan, and she actually felt very happy being there, but she was feeling so much separation from Krishna. And then she revealed to Bakula and Nava Vrinda that actually she's Radha. But they didn't reveal to her that king is actually Krishna. So then Satyabhama, she remembered that Narada Muni, he said to her that she should worship the deity. So she said to them, Narada Muni told me I should worship three-banded Krishna. And they said that they have the deity, Vishvakarma made sapphire deity, from sapphires, deity, so it's there in Nava Vrindavan. So they brought Radha to the deity. And Radha was very amazed to see the deity, so she started nicely decorating the deities, dressing the deity. And then every day she was doing puja. So one day Madhu Mangal came to visit Krishna, and then they went to Nava Vrindavan. And Radha was doing the puja for the deity, but she needed some flowers. So she asked Nava Vrinda and Bakula if they can go and take some flowers to decorate the deity. So that time, Madhu Mangal and Krishna, they entered into Nava Vrindavan, and they saw first the kunj when Radharani were sleeping. So they were thinking, oh, it's such a beautiful kunj and such a nice smell. Who is the girl who is living here? Because Krishna didn't know that somebody is living there. And then they went towards and they saw the deity, and then Krishna said, this deity is so beautiful. Worship is so much love and devotion. Who is the person who so much love and devotion putting to worship this deity? So they had a plan. So he asked Madhu Mangal to move the deity aside, and Krishna stand in the place of the deity, like a deity. So soon enough came Radha, Satyabhama, with Nava Vrinda and Bakula with the flowers. And when Radha came and when she touched the Krishna and put the flowers, she immediately feels so much ecstasy. But Krishna, he couldn't keep himself like a form of the deity, so he starts speaking. And he said, oh illusory Radha, you are so much like my Radha. And then Radharani, she also feels so much feelings of separation, so she was completely bewildered. So she said, oh, this Vishvakarma, he's so amazing, he makes such a perfect deity. This deity not even standing, he's even speaking. And then she started putting more flowers, but Krishna, then he started crying. And then Radha, she said, this Vishvakarma is so perfect, not even that this deity is speaking, but this deity has a feeling. And she fainted. But Nava Vrinda and Bakula, they knew that this is actually the king, that this is Krishna. So they quickly took Radha from this place. And Madhu Mangal also, he came and he put deity back and took Krishna from the place. So both of them, they didn't realize that actually another is Radha and Krishna. So now it's 9 o'clock and I'll have to stop here. But
we have more of this next
time. Yeah.
Okay, so.
So I will continue tomorrow.
As I say on radio, stay tuned. Same time, same place.
Same station.
And this wonderful Leela will continue. So thank you very much. And after Sri Gandharvika finishes her presentation, we'll hear from Bhaktin Shada. Okay. And that seems to be it, huh? So, then that means tomorrow we can start also with questions. So how many presentations then have we had so far? think eight.
Eight. So, anyway, anyone who wants to write out a question tonight, you can write it out. But we're going to answer up to eight, and we'll put the rest in a pot, and we'll keep them for the day when the class becomes so big that there'll be more students than questions. And then on that day, we can start to answer all of them. We'll store your questions. Whenever there's a chance, we can answer them. And also another thing, as I think two of our boys, or three? Oh, is David? David, you know.
I think only one of them
now. Only one of them now. So next, when we go to the next chapter, one of our young students will also give a presentation on this chapter, because we give them always one more week to prepare. So, but that's nice for us, because we'll have a kind of refreshment of the previous chapter by that presentation. So that's what will be happening in the next few days. So thank you very much. And if you don't come to tomorrow's class and hear the rest of this wonderful story, then you might as well just go jump in the Ganga. Yeah, the Jamuna. The Jamuna, which flows here in Mayapur. Anyway, thank you all for coming. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.